you may have heard that the ultra right wing government of Israel, as part of its coalition, and has the Jewish Home Party. It's led by Naftali Bennett, and he also happens to head the education minister. I can't think of anyone really more ill-suited, but that's the case. And his ministry banned a new novel, Dorit Rabinyan's book called Gadar Haya, which in English loosely translates to border life. And it describes a love story between an Israeli woman and a Palestinian man. And because of that, the book has been banned from use in Israeli public schools, this new novel, which had a lot of support among academia in Israel to have it. And yet, Naftali Bennett said no. The reason cited is for threatening Jewish identity. Dare an Israeli woman and a Palestinian man fall in love? And also, according to Naftali Bennett, the book also slanders IDF soldiers, the Israeli Defense Force. It's interesting that the blurb of the book was written by the writer and Israeli prize laureate Amos Oz. He's regarded as the most famous author in Israel living today. The decision upset him so much that he said, why not take, if you're going to ban this book, why not ban parts of the Bible? Ban it right out of the official curriculum, he said. Quote, in everything dealing with sexual intercourse between Jews and non-Jews, the Bible is 1,000 times more dangerous than Rabinyan's book. Enough said. That whole sickening story reminded me of this song.
Mama, I have bad news. I was stuck in the elevator with this hot chick. Sit down, Mama, sit down. 'Cause your son fell in love with a Jew.
Her skin is white and my skin is brown. She was going up, up, I was going down.
Oh, I'm in love with you. I feel in love with you.
Her skin is white and my skin is brown. She was going up, up, I was going down.
At the elevator, no electricity. Between us there was electricity. Was it meant to be? Could she be the one? Her name is not Janie, but she's got a gun. Do I speak Hebrew? A bit hard for me. Yeah, shavoda means you got a job for me. Does she speak Arabic? She said a word or two. Waqif ya batukhak means freeze or I shoot. She felt suffocated. I felt that the elevator's bigger than my house. She felt sweaty, so she got ready and she changed her blouse. Ows, ouch. I had to make a move soon. Looks better on you. The green don't suit you. She was cool. She made a move too. She said without the sniper lens, you look cute too.
Oh, I'm in love with you. I feel in love with you.
Her skin is white and my skin is brown. She was going up, up, I was going down.
Oh, I'm in love with you. I feel in love.
We faced some nightmares. She shared her dreams and I share. She wanna be a pilot, search the sky. My dream is not to be searched. Every time I fly, be ambitious, she said. If you want, it's not a legend. Herzl said it while standing on the balcony. For shizzle, I said, I'ma use that saying. Soon as they allow me to build a balcony, build a house, invite you to my room. Play in Tom, Remish Zahava Ben, Kultum, and boom, I will take you to heaven. All she heard was boom and heaven. I said 69, she heard 67. All I wanna make is sweet love. But if you wanna make tough love too, for a change, can I be the one to handcuff you?
Oh, I'm in love with you. I feel in love with you.
Her skin is white and my skin is brown. She was going up, up, I was going down.
Oh, I'm in love with you. I feel in love.
My skin is brown. She was going up, 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 I was going down.
لما انا احكي وهي تحكي ايوه بتحب العربية قالت لي بلحظة مطاعم البلد سمت لي مسكت مشاعري علاقة معك بدي ابني حكت لي وانا بدي اياك تبني مسكت شعري فهمت انا وياك بنلتقي لما شغل عرب يبدأوا الاحتلال ينتهي
من الله 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 من الله
من الله من الله من الله
I'm in love with you. I fell in love.
If only Naftali Bennett would hear that song, maybe he would just get goosebumps, but I don't think he's capable. This is KALW, San Francisco, and Tangents is also webcast at multicult.fm, based in Berlin, and from the album Dabke on the Moon, that is the group Dam, a Palestinian group based in Israel. And that's their latest CD. Mama, I Fell in Love with a Jew was the name of the song. Tonight on Gaza Corner, I'd like to cover a topic I have not touched on in way too long. And it's the endless war in Afghanistan. It's kind of out of sight, out of mind for Americans. But it shouldn't be. In fact, next time you pay your taxes, it's only a few months away, try not to choke on this statistic. According to a CRS report, CRS is the Congressional Research Service, the cost of keeping a single American soldier in Afghanistan, one soldier in Afghanistan, is $3.9 million a year. I repeat, $3.9 million a year, the cost of keeping an American soldier. That is, according to a government agency. The war in Afghanistan is the longest war in U.S. history. And the Afghani war and the Iraq war have been the most expensive wars in U.S. history. The true cost totaling somewhere between $4 and $6 trillion, according to a Harvard economist in a 2013 report, her name, Linda Bilmis. True cost includes long-term medical care. It includes disability compensation and social and economic costs. And these totals were, of course, from 2013, before the U.S. entered its third Iraq war this past August, and before the U.S. decided to keep troops in Afghanistan through, well, allegedly through 2016, but God knows if that will be kept. And do I dare bring up former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, who just before the U.S. invaded Iraq the first time, suggested the war's total cost would be, quote, something under $50 billion. And he added it would, you know, the expense would be shared with its allies. No and no. In fact, way no. Last week, the Washington Post had a very good article on what had been confidential information up until that point that provided a dose of reality regarding the war in Afghanistan. Don't look now, but the Taliban now has control of, or a significant presence in, roughly 30% of the country and now holds more territory than in any year since 2001 when the U.S. invaded and removed the Taliban from power. I'm not sure exactly the breakdown between Iraq and a war, but you can kind of say it's like 40-60, whatever, you know. So if it's like 6 trillion, you know, somewhere between 2 and 3 trillion of it has been spent in Afghanistan. Do you know how much money if that money was put to healthcare and schools and the homeless and God knows what else, how much better this country would be. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. And then you take that money, you put it into war, and these countries are far worse off than they've ever been. In fact, the whole Middle East is in such a unstable condition because of particularly the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. Taliban fighters have become very, very adept. They have a battle discipline and an initiative far superior to the Afghan security forces trained and equipped by the United States. The Taliban is equipped with all that they need: heavy artillery, machine guns, rockets, mortars, seemingly an endless supply of ammo. And as they overrun bases, they take a page out of the Islamic State book, because they seize U.S. weaponry provided, in this case, to the Afghans. Remember, IS got an incredible amount of modern military weaponry when they invaded Mosul, as well as getting something like, you know, a few $1 billion in cash from the banks in Mosul. The Taliban has benefited in a similar way in terms of seizing U.S. weaponry. They also have a communications network that is difficult to infiltrate. And meanwhile, the Afghan military forces have a very high attrition rate, meaning that they have a very high desertion rate. The morale is very low. Soldiers complain that they have not been home in 2 years. Junior commanders were, quote, openly defying their superiors, unquote. This according to Rahmatullah Nabil, the nation's former intelligence chief, who resigned just a few weeks ago in Afghanistan. And as the Afghan security forces struggle, what does the U.S. do? Well, U.S. special operation troops are increasingly being deployed in Afghanistan. Privately, top Afghan and American officials have begun to voice increasingly grim assessments of the resurgent Taliban threat, most notably in a previously undisclosed transcript of a late October meeting of the Afghan National Security Council that was provided to the Washington Post and forms the basis of the article. And in that transcript, an official was concerned by the insecurity in Helmand Province. And therefore, he thought it might be beneficial for the media to really get word of just how bad things are in Afghanistan. And they gave this transcript to the Washington Post. Helmand Province is the country's largest province. It's located in the south. It's right near the Pakistani border. And it's a place where the Taliban are increasingly in control. This was a key focus of the American offensive that Obama dispatched in 2010. He had this surge of 30,000 troops in Afghanistan. You may remember this. And now there are concerns that Helmand may fall to the Taliban. This would be a big deal. And in the north of Afghanistan, the Taliban and other rebel groups, including the Islamic State, have steadily advanced, particularly because of the alleged end of the U.S. and NATO combat mission, which has left a military and political vacuum. And it's forced Obama to extend the U.S. role by keeping at least 5,500 U.S. troops in Afghanistan after he leaves office. Another factor is the Taliban and the Islamic State have been bolstered by a Pakistani military operation that flushed hundreds of well-trained foreign fighters into Afghanistan. And meanwhile, the Afghan government, which the U.S. has fought to prop up for, what, 15 years, has such problems. It has endemic corruption, a crippled economy, high unemployment. And interestingly, the gains by the Taliban have come amid internal divisions, as there's a leadership crisis. You probably know that there was an announcement this past summer that their leader, Mohammed Omar, had been dead for more than 2 years, and we just found out this summer. So the contest for more power and territory among Taliban factions, rather than weakening the movement, has actually made it more violent. The Taliban currently have no interest in peace talks. They're doing too well. And their leader, Akhtar Mohammed Mansour, appears determined to strengthen the Taliban's bargaining position by escalating attacks in Afghanistan. Helmand is the source of much of Afghanistan's opium. This is really important because whoever controls Helmand controls the opium. So it provides a lucrative funding source for the Taliban, who also collect taxes for marble mining business. They also, in certain districts, have electricity bills paid directly to them. So if there's one province in Afghanistan that the Taliban actually should not have success, it was Helmand. I mean, Obama targeted it with 30,000 troops 6 years ago. The Afghan army right now has 18,000 soldiers there and thousands more Afghan police. Yet a few hundred Taliban fighters managed to overrun various districts as soldiers and police officers fled with little resistance or just outright surrendered. In conclusion, as I give you this bleak assessment of the Afghani war, a key takeaway of the Washington Post article is that Afghans, including senior military, no longer even pretend that they can fight the Taliban effectively on their own. I'll leave you with a quote from General John F. Campbell, the commander of U.S. and allied forces in Afghanistan. Quote, "I will not allow Helmand to fall," he told the Afghan officials in the recent meeting with the Afghan National Security Council, quote, "but I can't make you fight. You've got to want it more than we do."